the value that you guys have provided is you've actually taken the time to understand what the AGCO is doing, what online gaming regulation is all about or what it's intended to do. And at least half of the media coverage over the last couple of days that I saw was that celebrities were no longer going to be able to participate in advertising. I can't quite understand how so many news outlets have got it so wrong.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Gaming News Canada show. It is Thursday, February 29th, so a very happy birthday to all of the leaplings and leapers out there. As always, I'm your host, Steve McAllister. We have lots of news, including some of our own to cover on today's show. Amanda Brewer has taken leave from vacation mode for a few minutes to join us at the top of the hour. Regular contributors Chris Abbott and Phil Gray are here as usual, and Troy Ross of TRM Public Affairs is also dropping by to provide his perspectives on a couple of stories we've covered in this week's newsletters. We start, however, with the announcement this morning in the newsletter that beginning next week, Gaming News Canada's continuing coverage of the gambling industry will be done in podcast form only. Today's newsletter is our final edition. Moving forward, the plan is what we're committed and dedicated to continuing covering this industry in the most professional way possible. We will get the influencers and decision makers in the industry to speak with us on the podcast. We will certainly be bringing back people like Amanda and Phil Gray and Chris Abbott for roundtables from time to time. We'll continue to have journalists on the show as well. But as I mentioned in a post on my LinkedIn page this morning, there's really some personal decisions that have gone into this decision to no longer write the newsletter. I do want to say it's been a terrific ride for the past 3.5 years, and I'm incredibly grateful to the readers of the newsletter. As I mentioned this morning in the newsletter, there's far too many people to thank. I do, however, want to really thank Mark Silver, the founder of Parlay Media Group, who, when we started our company back in early 2021, Mark put an awful lot of faith and trust in me to launch this business through a newsletter and covering an industry that I really didn't know a whole lot about at the time. Just on a personal note, this newsletter allowed me to get back to my journalistic roots and get back to my first love, which is writing. So I'll always be grateful to Mark for that. And also, you know, his role as a publisher emeritus of Gaming News Canada, and also as the executive producer of the Gaming News Canada show and turning these hours into a podcast every week.
It's been a real treat for me over the last 3 years to get to work with someone very closely and Steve that I admired when I got into this business. And I see Alon is listening. And it was because of Alon that I even met Steve to begin with. And we almost got to work with you on that Olympics before you defected to Yahoo from the Globe and Mail. But it's been a treat.
Mark, thank you for that. Special thanks to Amanda and Phil and Chris. Amanda's kind of been part of this for day one, going back to the days where we did these shows on Clubhouse. Amanda, you remember way back when, and then we moved to Twitter Spaces and eventually landed here on LinkedIn Audio. Amanda's become a good friend and just a wealth of information. So really, really, really grateful to you, Amanda.
Well, Steve, it was so important that I hop on today to thank you because I don't know where this industry would be without Gaming News Canada. You have been a source of trusted information since the industry launched when a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of operators, a whole bunch of journalists were trying to figure out what this industry was all about. And I'm grateful to you for the opportunity you've given me to come on and share my voice. And I'm really excited to know that your voice will still be part of this industry because we need it. There's still a lot of misinformation that appears in mainstream media, yesterday's news coverage being a prime example. And there's still a need for us to be able to put out the truth, the facts, push back. And thank you for providing that opportunity and for continuing to think it's important to do that for this industry. So thanks, Steve. And I hope you know I will always be a friend and I will always be here if you need all kinds of informed or otherwise opinions about things.
Really appreciate it, man. And Chris Abbott, same thing. I mean, Chris, you've been along for the ride for a long time. And I've worn, I think, three or four different hats during the time we've done these shows on LinkedIn Audio. So again, the fact that you're like Amanda and Phil, you're willing to come and share your expertise and experience on Thursday afternoons, I can't thank you enough.
Well, Steve, it's been my pleasure, of course. And I think Amanda, you know, hit the nail on the head there. We all owe you a debt of gratitude for the coverage and spotlight. And I would say unbiased reporting on the industry as it's getting itself up on its feet. So thanks for letting me be a part of it. And yeah, you know where to reach me for your promised roundtables. But thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Tris. And just quickly, Phil Gray, I mean, when back in the early days when Mark and I managed to convince the Toronto Star that it would be a good idea to have a weekly column on this incoming legal gambling industry, you were one of the first people I reached out to in your trading role with Sports Interaction at the time. And again, I've learned a lot from talking with you and like Amanda and Chris, I've really enjoyed the relationship that we've built over these past 3 years.
I remember well our first contact when you were with the Toronto Star, Steve. And I think back in those days, I had to school you a little bit on what was happening. But look how far you've come in the last few years. And you can certainly school me on a lot of things that are happening right now in the Canadian market and North American market. And congrats for what you've done. You've worked extremely hard. And like Chris and Amanda and everybody else, anytime you need my soapbox or my rants, you know I have my rants, Steve. I'm always here.
Yeah, well, like any journalist, Phil, I've always asked the right questions, and to Amanda's point, I take a lot of pride in the newsletter being an unbiased platform. I do think there is a lot of misinformation out there about this industry, and we've tried to cover the positive things about the industry. We try to cover the warts around the industry. And again, I appreciate the fact that people like the three of you and Paul Burns and Troy Ross and others across the industry respect the fact that we've really have tried to make this a journalistic endeavor and not just be a cheerleader for the industry. And I think we've done a pretty good accomplishment in that. Let's get to more important news. And I wanted to get Troy Ross from TRM Public Affairs back on the show because Troy is one of the most plugged in people that there is when it comes to the industry. And Troy, may I just start just some thoughts. The AGCO ad standards finally went into effect yesterday. I mean, it's certainly a bit anticlimactic. I mean, we knew this was coming. And as we've written about in the newsletter several times in the new year, there were a few adjustments to the standards based on conversations that various stakeholders had with the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario. Just some high-level thoughts, Troy, on now that these standards are actually in place.
Yeah, I guess at first, Steve, Mark, congratulations, and know that you guys will be missed. And I'll echo the sentiments of the other speakers. I happy to participate in whatever other panel sessions you guys arrange in the future. From the advertising standards, like I watched a good portion of the Oilers Blues game last night. Saw plenty of gambling related ads, like the Bet365 had the responsible gaming ads, lots of Western Lottery 649 Play Alberta sponsorship placement on the rink boards. Frankly, the Oilers 50-50 raffle draw was everywhere. It almost made me miss the Pronger, Marner, Draisaitl cottage spots. But I suppose it ultimately, the question is, how do the stakeholders define success? If fewer ads is the objective, I'm not sure that the standards get us there or even that that's the intent. From the operator perspective, I think the industry switched gears on advertising months ago, right? The Ontario registrants are happy to do whatever is necessary to be compliant. Whatever they may think of the policy, they're going to comply with the rules. From the industry perspective, I think the next issue on advertising is really continuing to ask for the government and the AGCO to take some kind of action on clearly illegal advertising like Bodog, an operator that doesn't seem to have any intent to come into a regulated marketplace, but for whatever reason, continues to run ads on CBC News World every 5 minutes.
Hey, Troy, one thing that we tried to clarify a little bit this morning, to your point too, I mean, there's still going to be advertising out there. I do wonder if some people think that advertising is going to completely go away. And we are going to see certainly retired athletes involved in branded content segments. And again, we've been fairly complimentary of the FanDuel TSN relationship, the segments that Jeff O'Neill does on Overdrive, as we mentioned in the newsletter this morning. I think I'm a fan of the Mystic Mike segments on TSN Hockey Games with former NHLer Mike Johnson and James Duthie talking about betting options for a game that night. I think Sports Interaction, the segments with Jennifer Botterill and Kevin BX on the pregame show for Hockey Night in Canada are better examples of branded content than what DraftKings tried to do with Hockey Night in Canada in the first year of the Ontario marketplace. So there still is certainly some leeway. Hopefully people understand that athletes or celebrities being involved with sports books isn't completely going away.
I worry that, I mean, I think Amanda touched on it a few minutes ago. Part of the value that you guys have provided is you've actually taken the time to understand what the AGCO is doing, what online gaming regulation is all about or what it's intended to do. And at least half of the media coverage over the last couple of days that I saw was that celebrities were no longer going to be able to participate in advertising. In fact, I don't remember what article it was, but they said, you won't see Jamie Foxx on the BetMGM ads anymore. So there's a huge miss here. And I can't quite understand how so many news outlets have got it so wrong, but yeah, there will certainly be no shortage of celebrity involvement or of advertising. It's just not going to include active athletes.
Steve, can I say something if that's okay?
Yes, absolutely.
So the one thing I was talking to Paul about, because he and I have been kind of anticipating this coverage, and he was talking to some of the outlets, is, you know, the one thing I think everyone needs to understand is the industry, and by that I mean the operators and the regulator who puts the standards in place, can control the message. They do not control the medium. So that's all the AGCO can do, is put standards in place for the messaging and the content in the ads. They don't control where the ads go, the channels they are used, how many times the ads air, who airs them, when they air. That is completely outside of the AGCO's purview. The other thing to understand is we're not knocking on 2 years of a regulated market. It's going to be natural to see some pullback, some decrease in this advertising, because the operators are now moving from acquisition mode to retention mode. And when you're retaining customers, it's less about the TV commercials and, you know, the whatever Instagram ads and the billboards. It's really more about the rewards, the type of games, the products, the customer service, and all the rest of that goes into keeping your customers happy and loyal with your brand. So I think as this market continues to mature, because again, there's only going to be a handful that can afford to advertise on TV during hockey night in Canada and hockey games, you know, those operators are now probably at the point where they have a pretty happy, stable customer base. So the decrease is going to be just the natural evolution and maturity of the market as well.
Chris Abbott, did you want to jump in here?
No, I mean, I think that makes sense to Amanda's point. And I mean, I've seen it firsthand that, you know, the advertising and marketing costs for everybody for the first couple of years are way more than are sustainable in any business. So I think, yeah, we predicted that from the beginning. There'd be a natural pullback on that. And in terms of the point that Troy was making about just public education, it's something we've been speaking about also since day one, and something that we're still not doing the best job of. I think the industry and media need to get together versus butting heads. And I know Paul and Amanda are working on that all the time.
Yeah, I'll just mention too that we did reach out to the AGCO and asked to have one of their executives on the show today to talk a bit about the standards. And our request was denied by the communications team at the commission. And again, that's, to be completely honest, that's been a source of frustration that we can't get commission people who we always have great conversations with at conferences, that we can't come and have them speak in a public forum like this. Troy, it seems like there's been maybe a little bit of fuzziness around just how these standards are going to be enforced. Is that a nothing burger, or is that something operators do have concerns about?
I think that there are probably always concerns when you're launching a new regulatory regime, and anytime there's a tweak, there are certainly some concerns. And the truth is, for the AGCO is also, the AGCO is an excellent terrestrial casino regulator, but this is a different, this is new territory for them. And there are lessons being learned by the operators, and I think there's probably lessons being learned by the regulator as well. So there will be some teething problems, I'm sure, but overall, the AGCO is always happy to take calls from operators and try to work through the problem. So I hope that we've largely settled where the line is on advertising, and we can move on from there.
I want to get Mark over in here in a second, but just one more question for you, Troy, on that too. Your reference about illegal operators being able to advertise. I mean, how easy would it be for AGCO to put that into place? And again, obviously you need to get cooperation from the media companies as well, but is that an easy step for AGCO to make?
I haven't been part of they for 20 some odd years now, so I won't presume to speak on behalf of the AGCO. I think what I think a number of other jurisdictions that have done, particularly some of the European regulators, is once they have been regulating for a period of time, what those jurisdictions have done is communicated to advertisers, broadcasters, ISP providers in some cases in Europe, and said, we have had a regulatory regime in place for 2 years, 3 years, however many years. This operator, whoever that might be, has not made any effort. We have communicated with this operator, 3 times, 5 times, 6 times. They have never responded. And at that point, you've got the high moral ground to go and take some action. I don't know what their plans are with respect to dealing with the likes of Bodog, but I got to think 2 years into a regulatory regime, engaging Think TV operators or broadcasters directly and saying, this organization is clearly operating in the black market and has not demonstrated any effort to come into regulatory compliance. That's got to be a difficult position to be in if you're a broadcaster, particularly if you're one of the broadcasters that runs all kinds of programming suggesting that the government of Ontario hasn't been regulating or hasn't been minimizing advertising, like some of the CBC's investigative journalism reports.
And again, Amanda, that's something that we've discussed on the show, feels like almost on a weekly basis.
Yeah. And I think too, it's something that, Paul and Troy and I have spoken about, the need to maybe, now bring that a little further up on the priority list with our Attorney General, because there are actual tools that the government can use too, which are our laws. and, you know, looking at revising the language in our .NET advertising. And it's one of the topics I've told Paul would actually be good for the summit in June, just putting a panel together and saying, you know, now that we've got a regulated industry in Ontario, we assume Alberta will be following shortly. Is there really a need for .NET advertising in Canada anymore? I know where, you know, people like Troy and I and Nick Selsky, you know, come down on that question, but I do think it's something that, you know, from the Attorney General's perspective, it's probably something that needs to get, you know, raised up on the priority list now.
Yeah. Steve, if I could yeah, just want to piggyback on that. Yeah. Just today in Finland, Betsson was officially blacklisted by the authorities and the government there in Finland. For anyone who doesn't know, has a very, very tough regulatory monopoly as well. They were given the opportunity to become compliant and didn't, and kind of flaunted it a little bit. And then finally the authorities kind of came down on it. And I think one of the things that's important to note is that the relationship between operators and the AGCO is good, but the AGCO does not regulate a black market, right? They have maybe some ability to influence government decisions, to put pressure on whether it be banks or credit card companies or internet providers or any number of suppliers that make these operations possible. But that has to be a conscious decision outside of really the regulatory environment in Ontario.
Yeah, good stuff, Chris. Thanks for that. Mark Silver, Troy mentioned the pullback in advertising, and Paul Burns, the president and CEO of the Canadian Gaming Association, was also quoted in Simon Helps' piece in the Globe and Mail on, I think it was Tuesday evening, they've seen that as well. The CGA has seen that there's been a serious decline in the amount of sports betting advertising. And also worth noting that I think a lot of the advertising now is skewed more to operators touting their iGaming business now as well. Mark, something we've talked about in the show previously and in the newsletter and even just in conversations between you and I and Kevin Kennedy is that, you know, the pulling back of advertising and the decrease in advertising spend perhaps opens up the opportunity to do some more creative marketing and advertising in different forms or in different platforms.
It absolutely does, Steve. I think this is an amazing opportunity for the operators to revisit what has been, you know, a very expensive path to market around buying linear television. We've seen just within the Parlay Media Group sphere, we've seen our clients shift their focus away from some of their strategies. In some cases, that means we're doing more with some clients. In some cases, it means some clients are moving on to other tactics. It's all good. It's the signs of a maturing market. And as long as there continues to be investment, although with the macroeconomic conditions out there in the world, that investment might be shrinking. And as the market here in Ontario matures and as the rest of Canada is delayed in opening up, it's reasonable to assume that many operators, specifically foreign operators, are losing their patience waiting for Canada to truly open up. So I think you're going to see more creative formats. I also think that in general, as the broadcasting distribution landscape continues to evolve and change, and it's happening faster in the United States than it is in Canada, you're going to see that TV is not going to be the solution in a couple of years that perhaps it even is today. So lots of change, the ability for companies to be able to adapt to change, still be relevant to their audiences, still have a product that brands want to partner with. That inherently is the challenge when raising money and liquidity and debt is a very difficult task for companies to contend with just because it's not available or it's very expensive.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
Chris Abbott, we beat this one like the proverbial dead horse, but given the standards are now in place and we're talking about it again today, I do just want to kind of ask one more time about about athletes, current or retired athletes. And the AGCO does open the door for those people to do responsible gambling messaging as part of partnership deals they have with operators. And obviously, when you look at Wayne Gretzky, for example, I'm sure Wayne Gretzky is going to continue to pop up in BetMGM commercials and in the U.S. And the same would hold true with Connor McDavid. Do you just the reason I asked the question, Chris, too, is just given all the buzz right now around problem gambling and the conversations that are happening around responsible gambling, do you see any chance at all that we will see athletes and that there will be an effort around having athletes promote responsible gambling?
I would say my answer is probably going to be kind of cold. I think it depends on the existing contractual obligations that these companies have with athletes that they've contracted. Let's be completely frank. Nobody's paying the ticket to have an athlete be a spokesperson for your brand for anything but customer acquisition. I honestly believe that's the truth. But I do think that there is an avenue if somebody wants to go that way, and it could be from the athlete's perspective, it could be from the company perspective, that it's a good message to take from a knowledgeable and a person with notoriety. Do I think it's going to happen? I really don't know. I think we need to revisit our whole public push on the responsible gambling messaging. I think Steve, you mentioned in the newsletter this morning, the skit on Saturday Night Live, and maybe I'm jumping ahead on the agenda, but I think that goes to show you the public perception of what a responsible gaming ad is, right? They do a lot of spoof, they do a lot of satire, and there's a reason when something like that makes it into their lexicon. So, I don't see it unless it's a way that a company's trying to pay to get their guy out there or girl out there. Unfortunately, that's a little crass, I know, but that's how I feel.
Troy, you want to chime in on that?
I guess the only thing I would say is if you've been exposed to the operator ads in the United States versus operator ads here in Ontario, there's a dramatic difference. It's an outright war for player acquisition in the US, and the advertising and the very generous bonuses are the likes that you just don't see that in Ontario for good reason. I think the Ontario regulatory regime was designed to avoid exactly that type of advertising and sponsorship. So I don't think you can compare the approach that our friends to the south have taken with the advertising campaigns here in Ontario.
Right. Fair enough. Phil Gray, I haven't heard from you yet today. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah, certainly. I I've said before, I think it's kind of contradictory. You look at every in Canada as well, you know, across Hockey Night in Canada broadcasts, and I'm sure we're going to see it on Blue Jays broadcasts as well. You have ex-athletes that lead off shows and continually through the show that are branded, that are promoting, parlays for the most part, same game parlays as well. I don't know. Yeah. So you're allowed to do that, you know, in the show on a panel, but you're not allowed to, you know, have an ad running during the show with an ex-athlete. That I don't understand. So I have a, you know, like I said before, I have a problem with the consistency of the directive from Ontario on some of that. I know they don't have a lot of control on things like that, but it's the lack of consistency here is, and it becomes a bureaucratic question, like I've said before as well. You jump on, you know, a hot button topic issue like sports betting, but casino hasn't been addressed. And, you know, there's a lot of bonusing going on in casino as well. Yeah, it's be interesting to see where it goes in the next couple of years.
We'll go to the beach and get the last word from Amanda Brewer on this one.
I not much more to say than has been said. I think there could have been a more straightforward way to deal with this by just banning active athletes from an integrity point of view. If you're actively playing professional sports and you're, you know, it's a sport that operators are offering bets on, just to clean it all up that way, you know, you're an active athlete, you cannot appear in anything, full stop. I think that just would have been an easier way to go about this. What has, you know, resulted is operators now trying to reach into the AGCO to get AGCO to pre-clear their ads, which is not what the AGCO wanted and probably not a role the AGCO is planning to take on. So I think there's going to be a lot of confusion going forward. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, crossing fingers with some of the advertising and hoping it goes. But yeah, we'll just have to see. I mean, as Troy said, we're still figuring things out in this market. You know, it's just coming up on 2 years. So, you know, Steve, why don't we endeavor to have this conversation in 2 more years and we'll see where we're at.
That's a date. I'll put that in my calendar right after the show, Amanda. Thanks for that. I want to go back to Tuesday's newsletter and get Troy Ross back in here. And that was writing about the Alberta government and Danielle Smith, the premier. That government's unveiling its budget sometime Thursday afternoon, Alberta time. We were told early in the week, and we wrote about it in the newsletter, that there will be some the gambling about an expanded gambling regime in Alberta. Troy, I'm not sure how much you've heard, but one thing I was hoping maybe you could walk us through, because you have experience around this, is just the path to what happened in Ontario, the regulated marketplace. And again, that wasn't something where someone said, let's introduce legal single event sports betting and iGaming, and you snap your fingers and it happened right away. I think a three-year process between the government and regulators to get to the legal regime we have here in this province now.
Yeah, there was a extensive length, like, you know, let's not forget the government announced that they were going to do this in 2019 and then reaffirmed that in the 2020 budget. There was several steps to the consultation. Very first one back in June of 2019, where the government brought a whole lot of folks together in some government offices and went around and asked who the right and appropriate agency would be to oversee this. And there was a unanimous consensus from the industry that it should be regulated by AGCO and not operated by the OLG. And that sort of set the direction where Alcohol and Gaming Commission conducted a whole series of discussions with folks, went over to Europe, met with operators, met with regulators, and that led to ultimately to Birgitte Sand, the former regulator from Denmark, being engaged as the commercial advisor. But there were at least three separate and distinct steps to that consultation. Ontario was the first in Canada to take this kind of approach, so not surprising that they went step by step and it moved fairly slowly while we were dealing with a global pandemic. I don't get the sense that Alberta will follow that same approach. In fact, I would hope that there are a lot of key lessons learned from the Ontario approach that Alberta can take and implement into their own regulatory plans.
There are no-brainers in terms of doing things differently for Alberta.
You know, I've probably said this over and over on the show, and then just between you and I, Steve. I would give the regulatory regime in Ontario and the overall policy framework around it a solid B+. And been involved in one capacity or another dealing with governments on gaming-related issues for 30 years. If you get a B+, you cash your chips and you get out of the casino. there are, of course, there are things that I would tweak and change about any regulatory regime. But by and large, I think it's among the best and most competitive regulatory regimes in the world. It's got a reasonable tax rate. There are some elements of costs that are starting to get passed on to operators that's probably going to start causing some concern and some friction. But by and large, reasonable tax rate and reasonable cost of doing business. The standards are, it's a fair and reasonable regulatory environment. The context that I bring to the table, I used to work for the AGCO between 2000 and 2005. From my perspective, the type of due diligence that the AGCO has conducted for online gaming is a much more simplified process than we had for our land-based for many, many years. So while it may not be ideal compared to a number of other jurisdictions, it's a simplified process for Ontario, I think by and large, AGCO has done a good job of this. Of course, there are some things that could have been made easier, but the shift towards a risk-based regulatory regime, and if you were a registrant in what the AGCO viewed as a tier one regulatory jurisdiction, I don't think it was overly onerous compared to where the organization was, for sure.
I'd comment on that, Steve, just for the Ontario compliance process that I went through, and it was lengthy and it was very complex. It took about 8 months. One advice, or advisory to another province that's going through that, there was a great deal of redundancy in the Ontario documentation that was required of sportsbooks coming in. I think with a little, I mean, and no fault on Ontario doing this on their first time, but any other province going into it, I think with a little bit of oversight and some vision, you could reduce the resource and the workload for sportsbooks coming in by eliminating a lot of that, you know, stuff that just, you know, it was splitting hairs at some point that got down to the point of just, you know, that there was really no need for it. And you could have, I think, you know, by half the time frame, reduce the resource and tasks for sportsbooks to come in and be compliant.
Chris Abbott, I think you probably went through a similar experience than Phil. Any comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's thorough, right? I think we've touched on this before when we talk about operators who are, whether they're making the decision to stay or leave. The companies I've worked in and consulted for have more resources dedicated to staying compliant in Ontario than most other jurisdictions. So I think that's a consideration as well when you're looking at current, existing, prospective, future players in the market here, is that it's a little bit different. There's a little bit more to pay attention to. And the more jurisdictions around the world that regulate, the more that companies are going to have a specific team or people dedicated to that specific jurisdiction versus running everything on your Malta license or what it used to be. There's a lot that goes into that.
Hey, Troy, I want to go back to Alberta for a few more minutes. And I believe you had a chance to spend a little bit of time with Service Alberta Minister and Red Tape Reduction, Dale Nally at Ice London last month. I just wondered, just your takeaways from what the minister's appearance on London meant, and if you have any thoughts on, you know, if the budget speech in Alberta is kind of the first step towards a regulated regime, what kind of timeline do you foresee?
Certainly did spend some time with Minister Nally. I think the industry was very pleased to see the minister make the investment of time and attend the ICE show. I'm not certain that we will see a reference in the budget or not, and I'm not sure that there's anything to read into that. The direction for Alberta has been set and was set months ago when the minister received his mandate letter from the premier. And essentially that is design a regulatory regime for online gaming. My sense and my hope is there are lots of key lessons learned through the Ontario experience. And I suspect there's probably some back channel conversations going on between the Ontario government and the Alberta government. And, I think we referenced earlier, it took Ontario a long time to ultimately launch this regime. And I hope Alberta will go much faster. My sense is they would like to be in a position to do something this calendar year.
Hey, Chris Abbott, I think we've touched on it before here, but revisit it again. It's just that you have to assume that the size of the market would be much different in Alberta. I mean, we're not going to see 49 operators come into Alberta, but any guesses on what an open market could look like out there? Maybe I'll get Phil Gray. Maybe I'll get you to start on that one.
Smaller, and it's going to be interesting too, because there's a number of operators that are operating in Alberta right now. Is it legal? Is it not legal? That's kind of been the question in Canada for a number of years. That'll be interesting to see. Actually, thinking about that, Steve, would some operators continue to operate depending on the compliance process that Alberta demands? Certainly, you would see the Tier 1 books absolutely go into that, but would you see some Tier 2s just continue to operate outside of that? And what would the ramifications be for those books? There's certainly still some that are operating in Ontario doing that. That'll be very interesting to see actually Alberta go through the process and what they garner from Ontario and how complex they make it for books to come in. What's the tax rate going to be? Ontario, as Troy was saying, in a very, I consider a generous tax rate what Ontario is taking from books. Will Alberta do the same, or will they demand more? That's going to be very interesting to see.
Troy, something else we covered in Tuesday's newsletter was the first half 2024 financial report by PointsBet, and found it really interesting. We included the slide in the newsletter. Was PointsBet actually had a slide that looking at Alberta and British Columbia and what that would mean to the regulated marketplace across Canada. You talk to an awful lot of people across all sectors of the industry. You know, how often do you get asked the question about when's BC coming? When's Alberta coming? When's Quebec coming?
I get asked that question every single day. And, we're dealing with government and election cycles and, other competing government priorities. So there's a lot of guesswork involved. My sense is Alberta would like to do something this year. I don't think we'll have any clarity on what might or might not happen in British Columbia until that government is reelected, or presumably reelected in the October provincial election out there. So I don't expect we'll have any clarity on British Columbia until 2025. And Quebec, whoever knows.
Right. Hey, Chris Abbott, I'm going to ask you the same question, because I know you still talk to operators and you've done a bit of consulting. Like, how often do you get asked that question?
I'm not hearing it as much as I was before. I think there was a real keen interest, like, okay, Ontario's online, who's coming next, like immediately after, right? So it's kind of calmed down a little bit. And I think also with the... I guess the apparent difficulty to compete in Ontario has maybe held the horses a little bit in terms of expectations or gumption to jump into another market here. I do believe that the hope amongst the operators I've worked with anyhow, is that we will get multiple provinces and eventually all of them somewhere down the road to an open competitive marketplace. But I don't think there's any expectation that it's something we should be putting in the roadmap right now. I think that's certainly the case. And it remains to be seen, right? There's been a lot of hope that, okay, well, if multiple jurisdictions regulate, then they'll play ball together. So does Alberta work with Ontario and help that liquidity piece that we've talked about when it came to things such as daily fantasy and poker? So I don't know. A lot of the what we're hearing out of Alberta is they're pushing their own path right now. So that all remains to be seen. So it's fun to watch, and I guess we'll just have to see what happens.
Hey, Phil, I'll wrap this segment up too and just ask you the same question, because again, I know you are talking some different operators out there these days.
Yeah, it was when I was at ICE in London. I have a very good friend, a colleague that I've known for a number of years who works for OLG. And there was a couple of breakfast roundtables where all the provinces were represented, garnering information from Ontario and what they've gone through the process. For sure, Alberta is next. I'd echo Troy's comments on BC. That's going to depend on a governmental election. Quebec is far down the road. I'm here, and I'll tell you that right now. I'd lay anybody's bet on Quebec is, within the next 3 years, has anything to do with a regulated environment.
Right. Hey, Troy, well, before we let you go, just one last question. And it's always grateful for your time. And again, if this is an unfair question, I'll pay for the next cup of coffee next time we see you. But just in terms that we've talked in the show about as the 2 year anniversary of the Ontario market comes down the pike in early April, are you hearing anything out there on just how much consolidation might take place? I mean, is 2 years the right time for operators to pull out? Is it just what are you hearing along those lines?
I think the truth is not a lot. Most of my client work is related to some larger operators, so it's not a space that I'm paying a lot of attention to. What I would say is, while I am hearing certainly some rumors about, company A or company B pulling out of the market, at the same time, there are a number of other operators interested in entering the Ontario marketplace. So I don't know if that'll be a wash, but certainly 50 operators or 49 or whatever we're at seems like a large number. But it wouldn't surprise me if there were a handful of departures over the coming 12 months.
Troy Ross is the president and founder of TRM Public Affairs. Troy, it's always a pleasure having you be with us on the Gaming News Canada show. We will definitely reach out to you to have you on the Gaming News Show podcast at some point in the not too distant future. But as always, Troy, thanks so much.
Steve, thank you. And please do. I'm happy to participate.
Great. Thanks again, Troy. Hey, Chris Abbott, let's just want to talk a little bit further about the Saturday Night Live skit, the Rock Bottom Kings segment on last Saturday Night show. And again, there was quite a bit of reaction to it. We tried to cover a lot of it in the newsletter this morning. I got quite a chuckle out of a thread that Chris Grove started. And I mean, listen, anytime you mention sweaty balls or colon blow in a Twitter post, you're gonna get a giggle out of me. But Chris, just did you have a chance to watch the video and just further what your earlier thoughts? What did you think about the segment?
Yeah, I sure did. I mean, Shane Gillis is one of my favorite comedians, so I wasn't going to miss that SNL of all SNLs. I thought his monologue was maybe not where he wanted it to be, but I thought the rest of the show he did very well, and I thought that skit was good too. What do we say about it? I mean, everybody knows somebody who bets too much. So I do feel like one of the things I felt when I watched that was it was kind of real, right? Like it was satire, but there was a lot of truth to it. And back to what I said earlier, I really do believe that, you know, we need to reevaluate how we approach responsible gaming and limits and people getting themselves in trouble.
And Phil Gray, those limits that Chris refers to, that's something that you've been pretty vocal about in this forum the past couple of months.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't see it live, but I saw the post of the skit and I watched it. And boy, didn't it, you know, somebody who's been in the business 20 years, didn't it hit home on, you know, in not a great way on many levels. And perhaps, you know, for somebody that's, you can look at it as certainly humorous, but for somebody, you know, that's been around in this business, kind of distasteful, because I kind of, you know, I think in the back of my head, you know, would books not actually do this if they could, you know, and some would, and some regulated books would do it if they absolutely could. And as Chris said, I mean, the responsible gaming initiative that's been put forward over the past couple of years, I think is, I think it's misplaced, it's misdirected, it's misguided. It's spawned a little business of its own that is not targeting where responsible gaming should be, specifically in limits and a couple of other things. So, yeah, it was funny to me, but, you know, then I sat back, Steve, and I really went, you know, that's not funny.
Right. Hey, Chris, there's been a suggestion that within people in the industry that responsible gambling is a front burner topic. The operators take it really seriously, but the branding, the RG brand is something that's not resonating with people. Is that a fair perspective? I mean, or does the industry take a bit of an unfair hit for actually having some good RG, not messaging, but actually having some responsible gambling programs in place?
So I think there's a bit of both, right? I think operators and regulators and, you know, especially land-based casinos as well, have plenty of resources available to people. I won't say they're always front and center, but I think we're doing a better job now than we did in the past. I think there might also be a general perception of disingenuous. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, every operator's job is to make profit, and they make profit out of people losing money, right? That's the reality of it. And I think there's also a perception out there that gambling in and of itself is not responsible, or a responsible thing to do with your money. We can argue that, but I think that's the general perception. And I think that, just even the nature of it, responsible gaming, might not land with some people, right? Maybe we need to rebrand the whole endeavor.
Hey, Phil Gray, we're going to give the last word to you today.
Responsible gaming goes to limits, Steve. I mean, that's really, to me, that's the bottom line. It's entertainment, absolutely. And it can be a fun entertainment, you know, and a little sideshow for people. You know, the same thing is, you know, I like to have a couple beers or, you know, a smoke once in a while or whatever, you know, or buy the odd 649. But there's still in the industry. You see it here in North America. I mean, and look what we've seen in Europe, you know, with UK and all the studies they've done, because they've been around a lot longer than we have, you know, and its limits. If you're going to allow somebody to place a six-figure bet online on a single bet, whether they can afford it or not, I don't see how you can call that responsible gaming. If you're placing a six-figure bet online, you have a gambling problem. I mean, it's so black and white. So until limits are addressed, you know, both in deposits and bet limits and account balance limits, until that is addressed, I don't think you can come out and say, you know, we're all about responsible gaming. A lot of those responsible gaming conditions have been in place even offshore for years and years and years, as far as, you know, affordability checks and age checks and credit checks and stuff like that. But again, if you're going to allow those bet size limits and those kind of balances and wild swings and wins and losses, responsible gaming has not been addressed. in my opinion.
Great stuff, Phil. That's going to conclude our final LinkedIn audio gathering. But as Mark Silver made it crystal clear a little bit earlier in the show, Gaming News Canada is not going away. I'm actually really excited about keeping the brand going. We're going to continue covering this industry on Twitter. We're going to cover the industry on LinkedIn with the Gaming News Canada accounts. We will, as always, be taking this LinkedIn audio show and creating a podcast that will drop next Monday on gamingnewscanada.ca and the various podcast platforms out there. And through these podcasts, we're gonna continue covering the industry. And I'm actually really looking forward to sitting down one on one with leaders in the industry and being able to have some deeper conversations and to stay on top of this industry. And just a last thank you to all of our subscribers, both on Substack and LinkedIn. Mark and myself and the other partners at Parlay Media Group truly treasure your support of what we've been doing for the three past years, and we'll hope you'll continue to do so. Please, everybody, enjoy the start of your March, and thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.